been speaking on the idolatry of the children of Israel right at the base of the mountain where Moses on the top is receiving from God written in stone the prohibition for the very thing they're doing at the base of the mountain. So this is in Exodus chapter 32, and I'm just going to be using Exodus 32 tonight to continue speaking about what they've been doing, but going to other passages in the Bible. You'll notice in Exodus 32:4, they are saying, "These be thy gods, O Israel." And taking that statement alone, you would think that they were outright rejecting God, but you need to finish it. "These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt." They know that it was Yahweh, that it was Jehovah who had done this very thing. So the God they had just made with their own hands and materials represented God to them. This golden calf is their handmade idol representing God to them. I quote the commentator Davis, who said that the golden calf was intended to represent, not replace, Jehovah is made clear by these words. What they do here is a prime example of religious syncretism, that process by which ideas from one system are mingled with those of another. And so I had introduced the term that many of us had not been familiar with a couple of weeks ago, the term syncretism. I hadn't spelled it for you because it's not a well-known word. So in case it helps, it's S-Y-N-C-R-E-T-I-S-M, syncretism. The dictionary defines it as the reconciliation or the fusion of differing beliefs or differing systems of belief. Davis described it as that process by which ideas from one system are mingled with another system. Syncretism. Would you say the word with me, please? Syncretism, because I really want you to get to know that word, because this is what is taking place in our world, not only today, it always has, but I think we're seeing more and more of it even in our day today. And it reminds me of the word customization. A guy who fixes up his car by adding custom wheels has customized his car to a certain extent. Or maybe he puts different seats in it, or he puts a new muffler system in it. He customizes his vehicle. In other words, these are the things of his own design in making. I know John's been involved in customizing, you know, making it the way he likes it. I've customized my vehicle very little. How many of you have customized a vehicle in some way? So you know what we're talking about. When you customize something, you make it your own design, your own making. The definition of customize is to make or alter to individual or personal specifications. I always dreamed of getting an old 1930s vehicle and customizing it. Some have customized motorcycles, trucks, golf carts, lawnmowers. But now here's what all of you have done. You've all customized your own house. You move in and you say, "I don't like this paint, so I'm going to paint it this color. I don't like this room, I'm going to knock this wall out. I don't like these cabinets, we're going to maybe take those out, put new ones in. These countertops need to be new." Everybody has customized something. And the thing that we're most familiar with is customizing our homes. So when you customize something, it becomes custom. It reflects you. This is our custom. This is how we do things. Custom is mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 10. So be ready to turn to these passages, and let's go, please, to Jeremiah chapter 10, where we're going to see some, where the word custom is actually used by the prophet from the Lord. Jeremiah chapter 10, let me read verses 1 through 5. "Hear ye the word which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the, and here it is, the customs of the people are vain. That is, they're empty. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not. They are upright as the palm tree, but speak not. They must needs be born, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. So these people have taken this tree out of the forest, and they have taken this log, and they've customized it. That's exactly what they're doing in Exodus chapter 32. They've taken this gold, the earrings that they've had, as Aaron says, take all the gold ring earrings off and let's make something out of it. And they fashion something and they customize something to their own liking. But I want to make another point. Customizations are not really a reflection of you alone. Let me illustrate that. When you customize your house, how many of you put wood paneling on your walls recently? Maybe I shouldn't ask this. Somebody's going to be embarrassed. But that's something in the 1970s that was very popular. Because I remember doing it with my dad. You know, you didn't like the wall? Go to the Home Depot, not the Home Depot, wherever. Go to the lumber yard. Get these 4x8 sheets of panel and stick them up on the wall. And you have instant wood-looking type walls. Today you walk into that and you go, how absolutely ugly. Okay, so now here, you could customize that with that paneling, but would you do that today? Probably not. So your tastes are a reflection of other people's tastes. Even the way we dress. You know, I have to go back to these skinny ties. Don't get rid of your fat ties, guys. They're going to come back. But I have to go back to these skinny ties, and it drives me crazy because it doesn't cover up my buttons even very much. You know, it goes to the side. But, you know, now our dress even reflects the society we're in. Our clothing reflects it. Our vehicles reflect it. So it's not totally my taste. It's the taste of society. So I'm getting somewhere here with this customization. They're not really a reflection of you alone. Now go with me to 2 Kings chapter 17. And we'll see this illustrated in another way as we're talking about syncretism, because syncretism and customization are closely related. Here in 2 Kings chapter 17, we're going to see the end of the northern kingdom of Israel. And the point I want to make here is that customizations usually fall in line with the rage of the day. Look at verse 8 of 2 Kings 17. Let's start with verse 5. Then the king of Assyria came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away into Assyria and placed them in Halah and in Habor by the river Gozan and in the cities of the Medes. Does anybody remember what year this actually took place? 722 BC. So this is when Israel is taken captive, when they're destroyed. Now notice verses 7 and 8. For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God. So you're seeing here in verse 7 that the reason this has happened, the reason that they're going into captivity, is because they had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt. Now I'm reading this because you read back in Exodus 32, to whom do they ascribe bringing them out of the land of Egypt? They ascribe it to the golden calf. Years later, this is hundreds of years later, the Bible still mentions how that God brought them out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods. Now notice verse 8, and walked in the statutes of the heathen. Now, something I learned some time ago is that word statutes is the same word translated customs elsewhere. It's the Hebrew word chok. If you've got a cold, don't ever say that, because something will come up. It's chok. And they walked in the customs of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel and the kings of Israel, which they had made. So by worshiping God, Kylan Delitzsch says, in the ways of their own invention, they concealed the nature of the revealed God and made Jehovah like the idols. The verses that follow describe their customization of their worship. Follow along as I read verses 9 through 19. And the children of Israel did secretly those things that were not right against the Lord their God. And they built them high places in all their cities, from the tower of the watchman to the fenced city. And they set them up images and groves in every high hill and under every green tree. And there they burnt incense in all the high places, as did the heathen whom the Lord carried away before them, and wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger. For they served idols, whereof the Lord had said unto them, ye shall not do this thing. Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah. How did he do it? By all the prophets and by all the seers, saying, turn ye from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my, what's that other word for statutes? Keep my customs, God is saying, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers and which I sent to you by my servants the prophets. So how was God testifying? How was God speaking to the children of Israel? People will often pray, Lord, speak to him by your Holy Spirit. Wait a second. How does God speak to other people? He uses his people to speak to other people in the power of the Holy Spirit. Verse 14 is their response. Notwithstanding, they would not hear, but hardened their necks. Now, haven't we seen something about hardened necks? The yokes there in Exodus 32, stiff-necked, they hardened their necks like to the neck of their fathers that did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected what? They rejected God's customs, his statutes, and his covenant that he had made with their fathers and his testimonies, which he testified against them. And they followed vanity and became vain and went after the heathen that were round about them. Here's the syncretism. Concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. And they left all the commandments of the Lord their God and made them molten images, even two calves. Now, here's an interesting notice. Even two calves. So this cannot be referring to when they came out of Egypt and they're at the base of Mount Sinai, because he made how many calves? One. Two calves, and made a grove and worshiped all the host of heaven and served Baal. We're going to get to the passage where they make two calves. Verse 17, and they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire and used divination and enchantments and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Unbelievable. Sacrificing their children to the god Moloch. How did they ever get to a place like this? I'll tell you how. It's syncretism. They began to adopt the customs. They began to adopt the ways of those who were around them. And they began to import those things into their, let's call it their church. Because Israel in the New Testament is called a church in the wilderness. Not as we have here, but an assembly. God's response, verse 18, therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. Judah's left. But notice verse 19. Also Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the customs of Israel which they made. See, folks, we always are enamored with the customs around us and how people do things. And why can't we do that? And this is the age-long difficulty with people in wanting to be up to date, which we need to be, but at the same time being careful not to bring in those things which are not scriptural. But it is so easy to do that because when you bring those things in other churches, you see the wonderful, I put in quotes, results in that church by way of attendance. Because attendance is the marker for God's blessing upon a church, correct? That's what we think. That's got to be a sign of God's blessing. Our customs come from customizing. Soon we do not remember having done it any other way. And we influence others, as Israel did Judah. The northern kingdom influenced the southern kingdom. So even others are influenced by our customs. Why is it the people dress the way they do? Because somebody in Hollywood dresses that way. And they respect that person in Hollywood. Pretty soon, they're wearing skinny pants or whatever. Because they're influenced to do that. This is why mini skirts were the rage and seems to be coming back. You know, short skirts. Well, that's, you know, hey, that's the way they're doing it. We're going to look way out of place if we wear mini skirts. You know, we don't want to be. And so there comes a point where I'm looked to be the fool. As a Christian, if I don't do what they do. And in certain instances, yeah, that may be true because the customs they have may not be wrong, but then you got to watch out because there are some customs that they have that I simply cannot adopt. Because that begins to identify me with them, or it's just downright immoral. And soon, men's customs begin to violate nature itself. Let's read on. I finish with verse 19. Verse 20, and the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel and afflicted them and delivered them into the hand of spoilers until he had cast them out of his sight. For he rent Israel from the house of David, and they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. And Jeroboam drave Israel from following the Lord and made them sin a great sin. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They departed not from them. We're going to talk about Jeroboam in a minute because the title of the message tonight is actually The Syncretism of King Jeroboam. And so it's interesting that he is specifically mentioned until verse 23 says, the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants, the prophets. Now, we read about what the servants, the prophets had said in verse 13. So what we now know what they were preaching. What they were preaching, according to verse 23, is God is going to remove you out of his sight, folks. Folks, God is going to remove you if you don't get right with him. But they wouldn't listen. So, verse 23, was Israel carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. So, Israel's carried off for the most part. So what does the king of Assyria do in verse 24? He brought men from Babylon and from Cuthah and from Ava and from Hamath and from Sepharvaim and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel, and they possessed Samaria and dwelt in the cities thereof. And so it was at the beginning of their dwelling there that they feared not the Lord. So what does God do in response to that? He sent lions among them, which slew some of them. Wherefore, they spake to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations which thou hast removed and placed in the cities of Samaria know not the manner of the God of the land. Therefore, he has sent lions among them, and behold, they slay them because they know not the manner of the God of the land. So now nature itself is working against them. God is the God of nature, and he sends these lions. And soon man's customs, because of what they've done, violate nature itself, and God even uses nature in a way of judgment. So now what are we going to do? They say, in Samaria. Verse 27, then the king of Assyria commanded, saying, carry thither, in other words, carry to there, one of the priests whom ye brought from thence, and let them go and dwell there, and let him teach them the manner of the God of the land. Oh, wait a second. The guys they brought from there, they're going to send back there to put them back in the same old ways that they were. And that's exactly what you see happen. Then one of the priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and dwelt in Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Lord. Well, I wonder how he taught them how to fear the Lord. Well, you may think that now a revival is going to take place and that the land is going to return to the way that God intended it, but that's not true. The priests do not take them back to the... Okay, using the customization illustration. The priest that goes back does not take them back to the factory version. What God intended. How God had built Israel. How God had said, this is what I want you to be. He does not take them back to the factory version. He takes them to the custom version that they'd already known. How do we know that? Because of the way that they feared the Lord. Let's read on. Verse 29, howbeit every nation made gods of their own and put them in the houses of the high places which the Samaritans had made, every nation in their cities wherein they dwelt. And the men of Babylon made Succoth-Benoth, and the men of Cuth made Nergal, and the men of Hamath made Ashimah. And the Avites made Nibhaz and Tartak, and the Sepharvites burnt their children in fire to Adrammelech and Anammelech, the gods of Sepharvaim. So they feared the Lord. There it is. They feared the Lord. That's how they feared the Lord. And made unto themselves of the lowest of them, priests of the high places, which sacrificed for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord, it says, and served their own gods. Hello, is everybody awake? They served the Lord, or feared the Lord, and served their own gods. How can you fear the Lord and serve your own gods after the manner of the nations whom they carried away from thence? Verse 34, unto this day, when 2 Kings is written, unto that day, they do after the former manners. They fear not the Lord. Now wait a second. It just said they feared the Lord. That's why this is saying that what this is communicating is, yeah, they didn't fear the Lord as they ought to. Here's how they feared the Lord, by serving these idols. Neither do they after their statutes or customs or after their ordinances or after the law and the commandment which the Lord had commanded the children of Israel, children of Jacob, whom he had named Israel. What a mess. What a mess. Syncretism. Pull from here. Let's get some ideas. Let's bring this all together. And we'll have this really effective way of worshiping God that's really going to be attractive to people. So they go back to the former manners or the customs, not the factory version that God had prescribed. As it goes on to say in verse 35, with whom the Lord had made a covenant and charged them, saying, ye shall not fear other gods, nor bow yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But the Lord, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt with great power and a stretched out arm, him shall ye fear, and him shall ye worship, and to him shall ye do sacrifice. And the statutes, the customs, and the ordinances, and the law, and the commandment which he wrote for you, ye shall observe to do forevermore. Ye shall not fear other gods. And the covenant that I have made with you, ye shall not forget. Neither shall ye fear other gods, but the Lord your God ye shall fear. And he shall deliver you out of the hand of all your enemies. Howbeit they did not hearken, but they did after their former manner. Every time I read this, I just say to myself, what could have been? What could have been? And I think about the same thing as far as churches in America, churches around the world, and I think about what could have been. If this place had just stayed true to the Lord, what could have been? And all you're hearing about today is people giving in to syncretism. It may not be this major thing, but it's just little things that they begin to do that changes the customs in the church, and pretty soon they're way off base. So their custom worship or syncretism is in verse 41. So these nations feared the Lord and served their graven images, both their children and their children's children, as did their fathers, so do they unto this day. They feared the Lord and served idols. It's not that they had completely replaced God. They still worshiped God. And so you can go to all churches today and they say, we worship God. And the immature Christian goes, wow, well, I do too. Well, then we can worship together. And then that one who has walked into that place where they say they worship God too, he looks at the way they're doing things and going, you know, I'm not comfortable with this. Oh, just keep coming. You'll get used to it. You'll get used to it. And pretty soon he's given into the syncretism. He's now adopted the methods and what those people are doing. He is now practicing the same thing. And now he looks at others who come in and say, just keep doing it. And you'll soon be able to see how effective this is. Because in many cases, this is really a way to worship God. It's the liturgy. It's what we do here that is so attractive to the world. They still worship God, but in their own way. A way that was truly relevant. You ever heard that word today? Oh, it's relevant and meaningful to them. They got rid of the boring aspects of worship. And now their worship is passionate, dedicated, sincere, committed, customized. And then we wonder where the Lord is. For the glory has departed. Do I seek to worship God? Do you seek to worship God in any other way than what he has commanded? If so, you have customized worship. It involves syncretism. You may say, well, it's the way I do it. You are simply doing what you do because you are influenced by society and you bring in the very same things that the world is preaching and the world is telling you to do. So when we look at this, it takes us to another example of syncretism that's found between Exodus 32 and between 2 Kings chapter 17. And that's where I want to go in the remaining minutes. It takes us to 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. This is the beginning of the northern kingdom. This is where the northern kingdom begins. Because of Solomon's son, Rehoboam, who loves to tax the people because his father did, and he keeps those taxes in place against the advice of the elder men, and he begins to tax the people, and the northern kingdom revolts, and they say, we're leaving. And we've got a guy who will lead us, Rehoboam. His name is Jeroboam. So Jeroboam now takes over the northern 10 tribes, the northern kingdom. Judah, Benjamin stay with the southern kingdom. And they have their king, Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. But the northern kingdom, revolt. And they're going their own way. And you've got this king in a northern kingdom who begins to connive and say, how am I going to keep these people? Because God has established the worship in Jerusalem. And he'd made it very clear in Deuteronomy, wherever I establish it, that's where you go. Jerusalem is the place. It's interesting how Jerusalem is in world history. It's in present day news and it's in the future. Jerusalem. So we're going to see the syncretism of King Jeroboam. And it's a customization from which Israel never recovered. Notice, we're going to get to him in just a moment here in 1 Kings chapter 12, but just jump to chapter 15 and look at verse 26. This is something I've pointed out to you before. You're going to recognize this. But the kings who followed King Jeroboam, This was always said of them. Look at 1 Kings 15, verse 25. And Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, began to reign over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and reigned over Israel 2 years, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father and in his sin, wherewith he made Israel to sin. Go to verse 34, and now you've got a new king. Verse 33, in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, began Baasha, the son of Ahijah, to reign over all Israel in Tirzah, 24 years. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of Jeroboam and in his sin, wherewith he made Israel to sin. Look at chapter 16, verses 18 and 19. And it came to pass when Zimri saw that the city was taken, that he went into the palace of the king's house and burnt the king's house over him with fire and died for his sins, which he sinned in doing evil in the sight of the Lord, in walking in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin, which he did to make Israel to sin. And from here on, what you find all the kings of Israel doing is walking in the sin of king, who was the king of syncretism. The king of syncretism. And it's something they could not shake off. Every one of them walked in his ways. And Jeroboam establishes a rival form of worship. He knows he cannot establish the northern kingdom if his people are constantly going down to Jerusalem to worship. He's got to do something about this. So he establishes a rival form of worship. Now, keeping your finger there in 1 Kings 12, back to Exodus chapter 32, just as a reminder of what's taking place at the base of the mountain again, with the way Israel is now worshiping. Exodus 32, verses 17 to 19, and when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said unto Moses, there is a noise of war in the camp. Is this the way we worship God? Is this the way you've seen where the Israelites are supposed to worship God, that it's just noise, it's noise, it's shouting? And he said, this is Moses replying to Joshua, who said, man, I hear this, the noise of these people shouting. There's a noise of war in the camp. Hey, they're ready to go to war. What do you think that sounds like? And this is what you've got to picture. This is what's being established in Israel. It's the noise of war. Have you ever been to a service where it sounds like a noise of war? Usually involves music. Verse 18, and he said, it is not the voice of them that shout for mastery, neither is it the voice of them that cry for being overcome, but the noise of them that, what? That's, I hear they're singing. They're singing. Joshua, it is not a noise of war. What sounds like a noise of war is their singing. And it came to pass, as soon as he came nigh into the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. And Moses' anger waxed hot, and he cast the tables out of his hands and brake them beneath the mount. What is Moses seeing? Well, you see it in verse 25. And when Moses saw that the people were, you don't even want to say the word. They're naked. That's when Moses just said, okay, who's on the Lord's side? This is it. Who's on? That's what you see in verse 26. Who's on the Lord's side? Let him come unto me. And the sons of Levi gathered themselves unto him. And he says, get your swords. We're going to deal with this. And we're going to get that to that some other time. But this is the worship that you have seen being established in the nation of Israel now. For a moment. That they will again come back to. So back to Jeroboam in 1 Kings chapter 12. Jeroboam knows that having one place of worship means one established way of worship. So one place is one way. So in order to capture the hearts of his subjects, he must change the way they worship by changing the place of worship. Jeroboam was their worship leader. And notice his motive to establish rival worship in 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 26 and 27. And Jeroboam said in his heart, now shall the kingdom return to the house of David if this people go up to do sacrifice in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem. Then shall the heart of this people turn again unto their Lord, even unto Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they shall kill me and go again to Rehoboam, king of Judah. I've got to establish a rival way of worshiping God. Worship that turns men from the Lord is intended to change loyalty to a man or to a thing. Again, Exodus 32. And when you get saved, if you've been worshiping, serving idols, it's like Paul said in complimenting the church of Thessalonica. He said, how ye turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. Worship, ascribing worth to a worthy person. Folks, we've got to be alert to that which deviates from biblical worship. And the characteristics of deviant worship should help us know why it's not right. Characteristics of worship that deviate from that which is biblically acceptable. And so next time we come together, we're going to go into what we've seen before in 1 Kings chapter 12. Some words to remember that indicate that syncretism is taking place. Tonight, I just want to leave us with the challenge. Folks, we can customize. There's things we can customize, but we've got to be careful what we use. We've got to be discerning. We've got to try the spirits. We've got to make sure that what we're using is right. Somebody once asked me, when computers were first coming out, are you going to have a computer in your office? I said, yes. Well, that's the way of the world. Well, that's like telling you then that you shouldn't have a car because you're going to be an Amish. So here you've got this tension. What can I use? And so there is the extreme where people will say, well, I'm not going to, then you've got the black bumper, Mennonites, and so on. Rick Todd knows all about this, being up there with the Hooterites there in Montana. But then you've got these groups of people who, they go to extreme. Now you say, well, now you're going to the extreme, Pastor. If you're going to say, well, we can't do this, that's where I have a biblical problem with it, that we can't do that. So I just would encourage you to pray for our church, to pray for one another, that we would do what is right, that we would not be customizers, that we would not give in to the temptation to synchronize. Remember, the word synchronize is closely related to syncretize. But syncretization is blending and using what they have here and bringing it in here and saying, this is how we can worship God, and this will be wonderful. And watch the crowds grow. Father, I pray that we would be careful not to go the way of Israel. And even Judah, who looked to her sister to the north, and began to adopt the very things. Lord, this is what is happening in with Christians all over, in churches where they see other churches doing things and they say, well, we can do the same thing. Lord, I pray that we would hold true to your word. And we know that even the world will see later that those who syncretize are no different than they are. In fact, in some ways worse. Lord, may we stay true to you. May there be a difference between us and the world, a difference that they can see, that they would be drawn to, even as the church, the early church in Jerusalem, saw the difference with how you would not tolerate hypocrisy. And yet the church grew when people saw the difference. So Lord, I pray that we would be found faithful. This I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.